Here we are, not far removed from Thanksgiving this year, entering the Christmas season. And at the top of our news cycles, at the holiday season, when we're supposed to be enjoying family togetherness and all kinds of other happy times, we have things going on all over this country to distract us from that. And quite possibly to distract us from a whole lot of other things as well. Today, we're going to discuss the case against Mr. Daniel Penny. We're not going to discuss the verdict, potential verdict, what should have been the verdict, what is the verdict. We're not going to discuss any of that. We're not on the jury, nor would we be selected for the jury, and I think that'll be evident at the end of this show. But let's discuss why this trial is seemingly pretty asinine. So stick with us. Don't go away. We start now. Hey, everybody, and welcome here to another episode of The Richard Leonard Show. As always, I would like to thank you. Thank you very much for joining us. As I always say, it's very humbling, and I'm very grateful to have the audience that I have. So thank you for being here. If you're new, thanks for joining us. If you are a returning viewer, thank you for your loyalty and your support. We here at the studio, we all appreciate it. Before we get started, I know that you won't mind me telling you about how the show is made possible, just like we do every week, and that is by Mr. Carlos Cortez Jr. and his staff over at AmericaFirstRetirementPlan.com, put on by Cortez Wealth Management. Every Tuesday and Thursday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Mr. Carlos Cortez and his staff put on a webinar. And they want to give you information and talk to you about how to construct yourself a tax-free retirement plan. So get on over there, sign up. It's free. Get all the information you have. If at the end you have any problems, any concerns, anything like that, just go ahead and contact them. They want to help you get over those hurdles if you have them. So check it out. You owe it to yourself to do so. AmericaFirstRetirementPlan.com. Get on over there, and you never know. You might just find yourself at the end of your days working your ass off with a tax-free retirement plan or as little tax liability as possible. So try them out. At least hear them out. Okay. Mr. Daniel Penny. Now, I will go out on a limb here, and I will say that if you're not aware of what's going on in this case with this gentleman, you may need to broaden your horizons about where you're looking at information. I would argue that even some people who do know about this case need to broaden their horizons anyway. Because not only is Daniel Penny some dude who was just hanging out on a train on his way to the gym after school, but he's also a Marine Corps veteran. He served in the Marine Corps for some years. I believe it was 2017 to 2021. His job was that of an infantryman, but even, and it pains me to say this, you know, but you know, we all wear US something over our hearts, right? Not only an infantryman, but also an infantryman that participates in combat engineer duties. So demolitions, explosives, things like that. You need to get through that wall. People like Mr. Daniel Penny are the ones that would make that happen on the battlefield. So it's safe to say that he is trained. Oh, and by the way, he was an NCO. He was a sergeant when he got out. So he was a leader of soldiers, a leader of Marines. in my opinion, that counts for something. Just off rip. Being a leader in the military, in my opinion, is something that is a serious job. It is something that is a pretty good achievement, a pretty good accomplishment. In my opinion, for the United States military to entrust you to lead soldiers, and in Mr. Penny's case, lead combat soldiers into combat when and if necessary, that's a pretty serious job. The lives of those soldiers are in your hands. Their survivability, their survival is paramount. Their success, who they are as in the infantry, who they are as men, who they are as people, is also partly your responsibility. Career progression, becoming more grounded, becoming a person of good moral compass and good moral standard, I believe is important. Having traits such as courage, integrity, honor, sacrifice, just to name a few, is pretty important. And then also to lead soldiers to also embody those traits is important, I would say. So not only is Mr. Penny a student, not only does he work two jobs, not only does he take care of himself, he's on his way to the gym, but he's also just seemingly a well-rounded, good person. And so what happened was, well, let's do this. Let's get this out of the way. Many of you may have seen the video that he put out. It's 3 minutes and 12 seconds long. It's posted on YouTube. Fox 5 New York posted it. I'm sure it's many places, but this is the one that I found to share with you today. So let's just hear from his mouth what happened. Let's hear from his mouth, his perspective. And then we'll talk about what the narrative that we're led to believe by the mainstream media and other, well, I want to keep it a family show, but what other hun yucks are saying all over media, social media, and just around the water cooler about Mr. Daniel Penny. So let's check this out. Here we go.
Well, I live in the East Village in Manhattan, so I take the subway multiple times a day. In this instance, I was coming from school. I got out of class around 2:15, and I took the I was at J Street Metro Tech, took the Uptown F train. At 2nd Avenue, a man came on, stumbled on. He appeared to be on drugs. The doors closed, and he ripped his jacket off and threw it at the people sitting down to my left. I was listening to music at the time, and he was yelling, so I took my headphones out to hear what he was yelling. And the three main threats that he repeated over and over was, "I'm going to kill you, I'm prepared to go to jail for life, and I'm willing to die." You know, this was a scary situation, and Mr. Neely came on. He was threatening. I'm 6'2", and he was taller than me. So it was, and there's a common misconception that Marines don't get scared. We're actually taught one of our core values is courage, and courage is not the absence of fear, but how you handle fear. And, you know, I was scared for myself, but I looked around. I saw women and children. He was yelling in their faces, saying these threats. I couldn't just sit still. Some people say that I was holding on to Mr. Neely for 15 minutes. This is not true. I mean, between stops is only a couple minutes. So the whole interaction lasted less than 5 minutes. Some people say I was trying to choke him to death, which is also not true. I was trying to restrain him. You can see in the video, there's a clear rise and fall of his chest, indicating that he's breathing. I'm trying to restrain him from him being able to carry out the threats. And then some people say that this was about race, which is absolutely ridiculous. I didn't see a black man threatening passengers. I saw a man threatening passengers. a lot of whom were people of color. The man who helped restrain Mr. Neely was a person of color. And then a few days after the incident, I read in the papers that a woman of color came out and called me a hero. What I don't believe that I'm a hero, but she was one of those people that I was trying to protect. We were all scared. Mr. Neely was yelling in these passengers' faces, and they looked terrified. The reason why there was no video at the start of the altercation was because people were too afraid getting away from him, and the videos didn't start until they saw that situation was under control. I knew I had to act, and I acted in a way that would protect the other passengers, protect myself, and protect Mr. Neely. I used this hole to restrain him, and I did this by leaving my hand on top of his head to control his body. You could see in the video there's a clear rise and fall of his chest indicating that he was still breathing.
Yep.
And I'm calibrating my grip based on the force that he's exerting. And
just like we're trained.
I was trying to keep him on the ground until the police came. I was praying that the police would come and take this situation over. I didn't want to be put in that situation, but I couldn't just sit still and let him carry out these threats.
Okay. So, there, you heard it right from the horse's mouth. Now, some people will say, well, of course that's what he's going to say. He's on trial for manslaughter. Well, but let's talk about this for a second. Imagine yourself in a place, not necessarily just a train, but anywhere that's close quarters, right? In a place where there's a lot of people, it's crowded, like I said, close quarters, and there's no way to escape, at least for 3 to 6 minutes. And at one point, before this 3 to 6 minute window of no escape, you're presented with an individual that comes on clearly disheveled, clearly having a moment, if we will, and starts yelling threats. And imagine in this place that you are with women, children, maybe even clearly other men, innocent people. And you are in this small space, this small quarters. You are the one person who's been trained to defend innocent people, to defend their lives when they're scared, when they're threatened, when they believe that their life, limb, or eyesight is in danger, and they have no escape. And out of all these people, you're the one person that's, we're not going to go on a limb and say that Daniel Penny wasn't scared. He told you that courage doesn't mean you're not scared. Having courage is doing what you need to do in facing the fear. General Patton once said that courage is fear just holding on just a little bit longer. Just hold on to your fear just a little bit longer and act. That's what courage is. Okay, so now this man, we won't even say that he's black, that he's white, that he's yellow, that he's purple, that he's green. He's not an Oompa Loompa. He's not a, you know, whatever. Just a dude. And as you're sitting there, this man starts hollering in the faces, in the direction of these innocent children and women and other men. And let's face it, there are also men in our communities that aren't able to defend themselves. They're not able to build up the courage to act in the face of adversity, even if they might be a little scared. I think that we all can think of examples of other men that have cowered in the face of something scary. And I think that we can all agree that there have been times that we've all been scared. I think if you were to ask anybody, any veteran who served in the military, especially any veteran who served in combat, if they were scared in a gunfight, if they were scared when IEDs were going off, if they were scared at any time, they're going to tell you, well, yeah, I was scared. But you have to make a decision. You have to act. We've talked on this show before about all these different ideas and how to handle these scary moments. And sometimes, even if you're scared, you have to just stop thinking and react. Let your training take over. You see, if you train long enough, if you train hard enough, like the military does, you create what's called muscle memory. It's safe to say that in the Marine Corps, in infantry school, where you're trained to fight an enemy that's trying to kill you, you don't think. You don't have time to think. You don't have time to feel. You have time to act. You have time to do what you were trained to do. And the military's very good. Very good about that. So, let's talk about Mr. Neely. Now, I didn't do a ton of research on Mr. Neely. I searched him for 10 minutes, right? And what you find is that he had, well, now what you'll find is that he's a black man that was murdered by a white man and he's a victim to racist crime on a subway. But you're not going to find anywhere, unless you look, that he was a man who was homeless, who had mental health issues, documented mental health issues with page after page after page after page of medical history documenting his mental health issues and other issues. He had a criminal background that was page after page for a whole plethora of things. And I can tell you from experience, when Stu Peters and I were roaming the streets of America, mostly Minnesota, looking for individuals who were wanted for crimes against person, gangs, guns, drugs, rape, murder, those types of things, as bounty hunters, we took on high-risk files. We took on high-risk cases. And why? Well, I can tell you two reasons for sure. One, they paid the most. Those violent crimes, those heinous crimes, those crimes against people. The guy, for example, that we narrowed down to somewhere in Mexico who had just months before we were looking for him, raped his girlfriend's kids, who were both under the age of 8, and then ran to Mexico after she bailed him out of jail. Then he ran. Well, the Twin Cities apprehension team found him in Mexico through interviews, skip tracing, narrowed it down, used contacts, used people, used all kinds of industry secrets. We can't give up. Found where he was. Not somehow, he was dumb enough to come back across the border under the muse of some kind of interaction or transaction that was going to favor him a whole lot, only to be nabbed up, put into handcuffs, and brought back to Minnesota to go and stand trial and go sit the hell down for a long time in a prison for the crimes that he committed against those children. So the other reason, besides that it pays more and we have families to feed, we also had this call to service, if you will. You hurt women, you hurt kids, you're going to prey on innocent people. Well, your biggest mistake was skipping out on your bail, because now we're on that ass. And we were damn good at it. I'd have to ask Stu, but I would say that our capture rate over the course of our 15 years working together was 90% or above, well above. We eventually, some of them took a lot longer than others, but we eventually caught just about everybody, one way or another. And I'll hand it to him. Stu's my brother. That some bitch is good at tracking folks down. And as a team, there was nobody that was going to outweigh us. They weren't going to run far enough. They weren't going to hide deep enough. They were going to jail. So, that being said, all these people who have medical histories, especially mental health disorders, who have, like this fella that Daniel Penny had in a restraint, also aged out of foster care. I mean, the poor man's mother was bludgeoned to death and when he was a child. He had mental health issues. He was a drug addict. He was homeless. He was a street performer in New York City. And by some accounts, he was really good at what he did. I'm sure he was. But that day, he walked into a subway train car, started threatening innocent women and children and other men, innocent people who were on their way to or from school, work, the gym, the movies, dinner, whatever it is. Who cares where they were going? They didn't deserve to sit there and be threatened, their life be threatened. And here's Mr. Penny, who had the courage and was able to understand that this is not acceptable, and restrain the man. And as he said, I'm not trying to kill anybody. If you watch his interview with the police, maybe it was a couple hours after the whole incident happened, he told the police, I wasn't trying to hurt anybody. I wasn't trying to kill anybody. But this is how you restrain a man so that he can't do something to go to jail forever. He can't do something to die today. He can't do something to hurt these innocent people. And at that point, in my opinion, whether Mr. Neely was going to be hurt or whether he was going to die as a result from panic or whatever they say it was, he wasn't strangled. He wasn't choked to death. He was restrained, much like the argument that we've seen for years now about Derek Chauvin and George Floyd. Of course, the narrative is that he was murdered by a racist white cop. But the other side of that argument that we've seen all over is that Derek Chauvin was doing what he was trained to do. Putting a knee in between your shoulder blades at the base of the neck is what he was taught to do in his training. That's what they said in court. That was the training manual they provided to show proof of that's how he was trained. But I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a judge. I'm just some jamoke on the Richard Leonard Show. But we're also not dumb enough to believe that Daniel Penny was sitting on a train, minding his own business, listening to music in his head, in his earbuds, in his headphones, scrolling Facebook or Twitter or TikTok or reading some blog or whatever he's doing on his phone, reading an email, and saw Mr. Neely get on this train, who was clearly agitated, and thought, I'm going to kill that guy. Daniel Penny is not a vigilante. He didn't see this guy who was in an aggravated state and go, yeah, this guy, yeah, let's kill him. Let's choke his ass to death. The idea that that's his thought is absolutely preposterous. If Daniel Penny was out to just choke out black men on the train, he had more than enough opportunity. There were other black men on that train car. There were other black women. There were other people of color, period. If Daniel Penny's a racist guy that's out to murder folks, he would have done it. And furthermore, after the whole confrontation was over, and he let Mr. Neely go out of the restraint, he stood up. He stood next to the body of Mr. Neely, who they say was, I don't remember if they said he was pronounced dead on the train car or if they pronounced him dead at the hospital. At this point, it doesn't matter. He was dead. He died. He went to stood by there on the scene of the murder he just committed, and then told the police, he came on the train, he was causing a ruckus, so I killed him. Don't you think if his motive was to kill Mr. Neely, and those train cars opened, the doors opened, don't you think he would have tried to sneak out of there, run away? Do you think that other people who were on that train car would have told the police that he was a hero? It was a good thing that he was there. We were terrified. Yeah, there is audio in one of the videos that was captured of some guy in the train car going, hey man, you better let him go. You don't want to catch a murder case. Well, but that's not how he was trained. It's just not how it works. The United States military, as I said, does a really good job at teaching you how to do things like this and how to have restraint and how to use proper and equal force. You meet the force that is portrayed with equal force. Or lesser force, if necessary. And as the threat raises its force, or the threat raises, you raise to that level so that it doesn't get out of control. So, if we're all watching the same cell phone videos that were recorded on that train at this time, and we all watch the same interrogation video, and we all watch the same video from him that we just saw, how can we say that this is unequivocally a murderer? That this guy sat on a train, saw Mr. Neely come on and go, yep, this is the guy I'm going to kill today. This dude right here, he deserves to die. We got to just kill him. That's preposterous. It's ridiculous, and the mainstream media will have you believe that Mr. Daniel Penny, a Marine Corps veteran who served with honor, who to the best of my knowledge has never really been in any kind of trouble with the law. I could be wrong about that, but I wasn't able to find anything anywhere. Just chose to one day as he's listening to AC/DC because they're starting their tour again, just chose to murder some black dude that he saw on the train? How does that make any sense? I don't know. Maybe I'm the Jamoke. Other than just being the Jamoke on this screen, talking to you guys into a microphone. Maybe I'm the idiot. Maybe I'm ignorant as hell. I don't know, man. Of course, as usual, I've run out over time, so we'll be right back. We got to take a break. Stick with us. Hey, folks, real quick before we get back to the show. It's no secret that we have been experiencing a loss of sponsorships. Sponsors have been leaving the network, or the network leaving sponsors due to our convictions. And so we have recently began to ask you, the viewer, for help. We need your help. You are the most important thing when it comes to this network. You are the lifeblood of the Stu Peters Network. And so we are asking for your help once again. And in doing so, the way that you can help is to go down below on this video. Right here, you'll see the red button that's titled Stu Crew. You see it blinking there. You can click on there and it'll take you to the Stu Peters Network Locals page. You can sign up for a membership. It is $90 for 1 year or $9 a month. If you do the $90, you'll get 2 months for free. Also, when you go to checkout, if you use keyword Stu Crew 1, you'll get the first month for $1. So these things are extremely important. Keeping the network funded and bringing you content and information that you're not going to find on the mainstream media, the truth bombs that you're not going to get from the mainstream media. This is where you get them. The new age of information is not the mainstream media. It is platforms like this one. And we bend over backwards and break our backs to try to find you the content and the topics that are going to really affect you. So for $9 a month, you can join the Stu Crew, get exclusive access to behind the scenes footage, all kinds of extra content that'll be available to you. Also monthly giveaways. This month, Curable, which is a local CBD company, has a huge basket of body creams and lotions and bath bombs and Epsom salts and booty scrub. Not quite sure what that is, but it sounds interesting. They are going to give this basket away to one Stu Crew member. So if you join the Stu Crew, or if you are a person that just wants to give a one-time donation, that's great. We will accept that too. And you will also be entered into a drawing. So get on over to the Stu Peters Locals page. You can also go to StuPeters.com and sign up there as well. But it is easier to just go down and hit the red button there that says Stu Crew and sign up that way. Again, it's $9 a month or $90 a year. You get two months for free. And when you check out, if you use Stu Crew 1 as a keyword, you should get 1 month for free. We really do appreciate your support. And as I said, you are the lifeblood of this network. We can't do this work without you. We can't continue to bring you all of this amazing content without your support. So thank you once again for being here. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for supporting us. We really do appreciate it. We really do love you. Thank you. Okay. All right, let's dive back in. Because we don't have a whole lot of time, and to be quite honest, we could probably talk about this thing for more than our show allows. But I had mentioned in the first segment that the United States military does a really good job at training us how to be this person, right? They train us how to see a threat and decide whether or not this is a threat that is serious enough for us as individuals or as a team to take action, to be able to assess what's going on around us. When you hear things like head on a swivel, complacency kills, things like that, right? Like head on a swivel means like always be watching what's going on. But also, when you enter a potentially dangerous or threatening situation, you better be able to in a split second make a decision and don't be wrong about it. Now, we're all human, we all err. So of course there's the potential to be wrong. But in this case, I don't think that Mr. Penny was wrong. And so maybe this is something that needs to be discussed in the courtroom. The question is, and we didn't get to hear because cameras weren't allowed in the courtroom, has anybody thought about bringing in trained people that teach military folks, soldiers, Marines, airmen, sailors, about how to interact in hand-to-hand altercations? And by altercations, I mean anything from riot control to, and I guess not even just riot control, because riot control can get, it can get pretty spicy pretty quickly, but just heightened conversations, heightened situations, all the way to lethal force. Members of the military are trained on how to handle these situations. Not only members of the military, but people like Mr. Penny, myself, who served in the infantry, are trained on these types of things. It's no illusion that at some point in combat, you may find yourself out of bullets, weapon malfunctions, doesn't work. You're not in a situation to do corrective action right now, right at this second, because the enemy's at your door. And so if you're at a point where where you got to fix bayonets, a lot of things have went wrong. But they're trained for that. But how does the United States military teach us how to turn that off? What did the United States of America do for Mr. Penny to tell him, hey man, now that you're out of the Marine Corps, if you ever find yourself in a situation where you believe innocent people's life, limb, or eyesight are at risk, and life, limb, or eyesight is what is used to dictate whether or not deadly force is necessary. So in a situation where that could be a thing, how did they teach him to just keep his ass in that chair, keep his earbuds in, and just keep reading your email? Or take your earbuds out and start up your camera and get this crazy guy who's threatening everybody on this train, innocent people, just record him. Maybe you'll make some money on the video if you get a better angle than the next guy. Why did they not teach him to decide, yeah, you know what? I'm not going to give my phone to the guy next to me and say, hold on to this. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to get up out of my seat. I'm not going to restrain this crazy man who clearly needs some assistance, who needs some help. I'm not going to restrain him from hurting himself or others. Not going to do that. We're just, let's ride this thing out and see what happens. How did the military teach him to turn that off? The answer is that they don't. And for many veterans, for many, many veterans, they see their oath as a lifelong oath. Just because I no longer put on that uniform and lace up those boots doesn't mean that my allegiance to the oath that I took to defend this country against all enemies, foreign and domestic, stops. If I find myself in a situation where there are people's lives at danger, their life, limb, or eyesight, I'm going to act. And like my father has always said, who's a retired police officer, I'd rather be judged by 12 than carried by 6. And I agree with that wholeheartedly. I would not be able to, in good faith, look myself in the mirror if I stood by and watched something happen to these people. When you come in a space and say, I don't care, I'm thirsty, I'm hungry, and I don't give a fuck about going to jail for the rest of my life. I don't even care if I die today. Somebody in this son of a bitch is dying, and it's either going to be me or one of you. And I sat back and kept my earbuds in my ears, and something, God forbid, happened to an innocent person, I'd never be able to live that down in my own mind. And I believe that a whole lot of other veterans would say the same thing. I believe that a whole lot of other ex-police officers would say the same thing. I believe that a whole lot of other patriots would say the same thing. Number one, the police can't be everywhere all the time. But along with that, we have had quite a few years now of hating the police. Let's defund the police. The police are racist. They don't even do their jobs. All they do is they just look for black folks to hassle. They want to shoot innocent people. They want to pick on people that are down on their luck. Because who's going to miss the homeless guy, right? It's all bullshit. There are enough patriots in this country. Or at least there should be enough patriots in this country to be able to say, I will stand up for you. For you, for you, and for you, if need be. Good Samaritan law, I don't know. I guess I don't really know what that means. But I think if we have evidence, such as we do in this case, that it was a reaction to a situation that was certainly certainly had the potential to risk life, limb, or eyesight. I guess I don't understand why we're having a trial. I believe Daniel Penny when he says, I didn't choke him out. My goal wasn't to hurt him. My goal was to restrain him. When we're taught hand-to-hand combat tactics, such as riot control, for example, if you have to go hands-on with somebody, the easiest way to control them is to gain control of their back, much like he did, place a hand across their collarbone or clavicle, and then also control the head. If you think about, if you ever played basketball and you had a coach that was worth his salt, he would have taught you that when you're playing defense, pay attention to the waistline of the person you're defending when they have the ball. Their waistline will tell you where they're going. You just have to train yourself to be quick enough to get in front of it and play good defense. So, much like the restraint. If you want to control somebody who is out of control and subdue them. And as he was doing, hold them till the cops get there, because the police can't be everywhere all the time, especially on a train that's moving underground to the next stop. This is an excellent way to do that. You control their head and shoulders, lock your feet on the inside of their knees from behind, and they can't really move. They can struggle all they want. It's hard to hit you over their head because you can see it coming and you could bob and weave. And you have control. I don't see how this is such a crazy idea for people. But maybe that's not even the point. Maybe the point here is that men and women like Daniel Penny, like myself, like Jason, who's on the show often, like many other veterans that you may know who would have done the same or similar in this situation, maybe this might prove to be one of the things that causes us veterans as a community to just not help. Maybe this is what causes us to just stand by. It's tough. And as I said, I don't know how I'd be able to look myself in the mirror. But many of us have a whole lot to lose. Retirements, families, marriages, jobs, stability, security, freedom. We got a lot to lose. And the idea that any one of us would sacrifice once again, just another example, sacrifice all of that, because you never know how it's going to turn out. So you sacrifice all of that once again for the good of the people around you. For what? To be called a racist vigilante? What if Mr. Neely was a white man? Would these discussions even be happening? Would this trial even be happening? In my opinion, this is an example of how our government, or at least the city government and county government and state government in the state of New York, in New York City, sees veterans. Just maybe. But at the end of the day, what are we going to do? If this case proves to put a man in prison for 15, 20, 25 years, whatever the max sentence is, how many of us are going to be there when you need it? Now, some would say, well, who knows if that time will ever come? And I'd agree with that. Who knows? But I think now, in a world more than ever that's more polarized, that's more violent, where people are more desperate and a whole lot more bold than we've seen in recent past and, of course, the past in general. I don't know if I'd call Daniel Penny a hero, because I wouldn't care to be called a hero in this situation. I would care to be called a veteran who stood up for innocent people once again. I would rather have this situation be put up as a win for the United States of America and the United States military. This man served his country with honor and dignity and courage. He led soldiers, he led Marines, and he trained to fight and obliterate our enemies abroad or anywhere they tend to show their face. And what we saw here, it wasn't obliteration. It wasn't a vigilante. This man displayed courage. The courage we taught him. I wonder how, I really wish, hey guys, is there any way, I would love to talk to Daniel Penny at some point, and I'm sure everyone in America would love to talk to Daniel Penny. But what do you think he's feeling right now? What do you think he's been feeling since all this happened? I'm put on trial for manslaughter? All I did was help these people. People of color came out on social media. It's been everywhere. They're calling him a hero. They're saying, well, it's really good. Thank God he was there. Oh my God, I was so scared. I can't believe he was there. Thank you. I can't believe it. And here we are, putting this man on trial. Now, let's not be mistaken. I'm not sitting here in front of this camera talking into this microphone trying to say that veterans should be running all over this country like vigilantes it's not the Wild Wild West. I get it. But when you find yourself in a situation that just may call for your, expertise, things you were trained in, like diffusing a situation with equal or lesser force. I mean, if you haven't watched it, I challenge you to, don't challenge you. I urge you to go find the video online. I mean, all you gotta do is Google his name and you'll find it. In fact, the Free Press on YouTube put out a pretty good, it's like an 8-minute long video of cell phone videos of the altercation and what happened after. And the police interviews, there's body cam footage in there, there's cell phone footage in there, and the police interviews of the bystanders that were on the train car, the people that stuck around to talk to the police. Listen to what they got to say. Does that count for nothing? And then we get to see Mr. Neely's family being interviewed on the news. I think I saw his uncle and his father talking about how it's just so sad to see my nephew in this position and blah, blah, blah. Well, let me ask you a question. If you're so concerned about your son and your nephew, why did he age out of the foster care system? Why has he been homeless for quite a while? Why is he a person who clearly needed some assistance, but seemingly didn't have any family around him to help? After all, isn't that what family is for? When you're down on your luck, to at least be supportive. Like, I get it, right? Like, you know, sometimes folks just don't have, they don't have the resources to help you financially. Your family doesn't always have those resources. I get that. But you can always lend support. You can always, always be there for your children, for your nephew. What the fuck were you guys doing? That's what I'd like to know. Anyway. My concern about this whole case is that we now have a pretty loud example of how people or places in our government, not necessarily the federal government, I haven't heard any federal government reactions to this, but how the government in New York anyway feels about veterans. I mean, wasn't it just long ago? speaking of New York, wasn't it just long ago that New York kicked out a whole plethora of veterans, homeless veterans, that a nonprofit had put up in a hotel so they could stay up out of the cold or out of the elements or whatever? Didn't that hotel kick those veterans out to put in illegal migrants because the state government was going to pay them more than the nonprofit was paying to have veterans there? Didn't that just happen in New York not too long ago? So what's really going on in New York for veterans? How do they really feel about vets? Let's dig into that. Let's talk about that. And so part of the concern, getting back to my concern about this case, is it makes me nervous for you. It makes me nervous for the innocent bystander who may or may not find themselves in a position where they're faced with somebody that means to do them harm, either because they really want to do them harm or they have mental illness or whatever. Are these people who swore an oath to this country to defend this democracy, to defend this country, to defend this place, our home? Are they going to be willing to make that sacrifice when they know, when they think that they're going to lose their livelihood? They're going to lose the ability to watch their kids grow up. Lose everything. Daniel Penny is just a 24-year-old kid who wants to be an architect and work in two jobs to put himself through school. He doesn't come from a family that's able to pay for his college. Maybe that's why he joined the military, to get help paying for college. Now, I would argue that there's a whole lot of people that maybe should have thought about the military as an option to help them through tough times. The military in itself can be an arduous journey. But more than that, it's rewarding. It'll change your life. And for most people, I believe for the better. I believe it makes you a better person. It makes you a better man. It makes you a better woman. It just makes you a better, rounded person. It makes you understand what sacrifice really is. It makes you understand what being a survivor really is. And so for those lessons, who for some come very hard during their service, They're rewarded with things like college tuition. They're rewarded with things like VA home loans. They're rewarded with other benefits. And let's not be mistaken, not always very easy to obtain. But yet they're there. Are the veterans around you going to be so quick to jump to your defense, should you need it, knowing that all this is going on? I would like to say that, no, I don't think that that's going to be the case. I think that we're going to be able to see through this BS, and we're going to be able to save this idea that we hold on to our oath until the day we die, and hope that this oath becomes part of our legacy and it carries on. But if things like this keep happening, I don't know, man. I think you're going to start seeing a whole lot of veterans just moving to the woods. Maybe you're going to start seeing groups of 15, 20, or 30 vets buying up 500 acres of land or 150 acres of land or whatever, building their own little homesteads and building their own little communities, and that's where they'll be. Meanwhile, innocent people don't have this security that they may not even know is there. They don't even know that there's somebody around them that may stick up for them and stand in front of a crazy man who threatened to kill you. But I'll tell you what, when and if that happens, and one of us intervene and save your life, one of your limbs, or your eyesight, I bet you'd be really happy that they're there. Daniel Penny is not a murderer, but he's also not a hero. Daniel Penny is a Marine who swore an oath to this country and lived up to that, even though his days wearing a uniform are behind him. And in my opinion, that should play a huge factor in what happens to him in this case. The fact that this case is even happening, that this trial is even happening, in my opinion, I believe is a failure to him and everyone else that wore a uniform or is currently wearing a uniform. We used to be really great about this type of thing. I hope that we can be great at it again. And I hope soon. Veterans are not the threat. They're not the threat.
As Christians in a Christian country, we have a right to be, at minimum, agnostic about the leadership being all Jewishly occupied.
We literally should be at war with fucking Israel 100 times over, and instead we're just sending them money, and it's fucking craziness.
Look at the state of Israel, look at the state of Tel Aviv, and look at the state of Philadelphia. You tell me where this money's going. You tell me who's benefiting from this.
I am prepared to die in the battle fighting this monstrosity that would wish to enslave me and my family and steal away any rights to my property and to take away my God, go fuck yourself. Will I submit to that?
And if you've got a foreign state, you've got dual citizens in your government, who do you think they're supporting?
God, right now, would you protect the nation of Israel and protect those of us, not just our church, but every church in the world and in this nation that's willing to put their neck on the line and say, we stand with them.
You can look at Trump's cabinet. You can look at Biden's cabinet. It's full of Jews.
I have a black friend in school. I have nothing against blacks. She has nothing against me. She understands where I'm coming from.
Excuse me, I'm a Jew, and I just like to say that, you know, in our Bible it says that you're like animals.
The Jews crucified our God.